when I was in Tilil Air Base, which was just outside the southern city of Nasiriyah, it was sort of a desolate, almost a wasteland outside the city. And one of the initial tasks of the army was to clear and prepare the base for occupation. So we were all setting up our equipment and so forth. And we noticed squadrons of people going by, some Air Force, some other, driving four-wheelers with their rifles, chasing after dogs and shooting them or otherwise killing them. And a lot of guys in my unit objected to this. Many of them were hunters or they were dog lovers or so forth, and they just felt it was sort of cruel and unsportsmanlike. And not only did I share those feelings, but I went a step further in that this was very disturbing to me because my conception of a soldier, especially an American soldier, was that they were someone who went to war and who took life reluctantly, that they were sort of reluctant heroes answering their country's call. And what I saw was the opposite. I saw someone reveling in taking life, reveling in destruction. And this wasn't something that that pleased me. And I thought, well, this is the sort of behavior that this is how it starts, and then it escalates to others, to human beings, and so forth.
And also at Tilil, there was a prison camp. Can you describe the conditions there and what your role was with the prison camp?
Yes. We were operating a small prisoner of war camp in the south. It was sort of a way station where the prisoners would pass through on their way somewhere else. But during the initial stages of the war, prisoners were also held there. It was very small, maybe only a few hundred, and it grew a little bit larger as time went on. In this instance, I actually worked shifts at the prison camp, mostly as a radio operator, but sometimes not really a guard, but sort of on duty there. And it was essentially a series of barbed wire enclosures with tents inside and then slit trenches where the prisoners would be housed and they would mostly stay underneath the tents, maybe 30 or 40 feet from the American guards. But the difference was at this stage of the war, most of the people we captured were young men or clearly soldiers or some kind of combatants who had been captured during military operations. Later on at Abu Ghraib and elsewhere, that wasn't the case. So really it was sort of a small ferry point between the large prisons in the north like Abu Ghraib and some of those in the south like Umm Qasr.
We're speaking with Aidan Delgado, the author of the new book, The Sutras of Abu Ghraib, Notes from a Conscientious Objector in Iraq. And your epiphany at Tilil seems to have come one night when you were watching a moth struggle while stuck to flypaper. What was that night like for you?
Well, you know, that moment was particularly poignant for me. I was on night duty at the prison camp. I was trying to write a letter home. And really, I was grappling with a lot of feelings that had been developing for a long time. And it certainly wasn't, I wouldn't like to use the word epiphany because it wasn't a sudden occurrence. It was sort of the culmination of a long process that began years before. But I was so struck by how poor of a Buddhist I was and how little I was obeying Buddhist ethics and Buddhist ideas about morality. And the moth just sort of was that final straw that broke my back, in a sense, looking up at this creature stuck to the flypaper, tearing itself apart, attempting to get free. And then contrasting that with looking out my window and seeing these Iraqi prisoners held behind barbed wire. And I was just struck by the sort of monstrous contrast between Buddhist ideals, the ideals of peace, compassion, love, and then what I was acting out, being a prison guard in this war in Iraq. And so my letter home carried a lot of that, those feelings with it, the feelings of conflict and of not living up to who you wanted to be. And that was one of the incidents that really galvanized my desire to apply for conscious objector status.
And the conditions that those prisoners at the Tilil jail faced, what were those conditions like?
I would describe those conditions as Spartan. They had a meal ready to eat, a ration, water bottles. They were under a tent. They had an open slit trench. They didn't really have any like duties or entertainment or anything, so mostly they sat around, lay around underneath the tent all day. There was medical service available. So it really wasn't... And the guards didn't interact with the prisoners very much, which was probably another benefit. So mostly it was just kind of a boredom of them sitting there behind barbed wire. And the main atmosphere there was sullen, not really aggressive or hostile, which wasn't the case later on at Abu Ghraib. So I think that I would describe the prison conditions there as, you know, adequate or minimally adequate, which was something I really couldn't say about Abu Ghraib, where the situation was much, much worse and the conditions much, much worse.
And those conditions led to a famous uprising of prisoners there, a riot that you experienced. What happened during that riot, and especially afterwards? What did you see?
Well, you're referring to the November 24th incident, which was mentioned in the Taguba report in the sort of back annexes after the main atrocities were enumerated. And essentially what happened on November 24th in the afternoon, the prisoners had been demonstrating for several days. And by demonstrating, I mean marching around with handmade signs, shouting slogans, and demanding redress. They were tired of the rotten food being served them. They were tired of the cold weather conditions and lack of cold weather clothing. And one of their grievances also was the not being allowed to use tobacco. And this had been going on for several nights and had been sort of increasing in intensity. And in the afternoon of the 24th, the riot became very disorderly. The prisoners started fighting among one another, throwing stones at each other, and then eventually throwing stones and pieces of wood at the guards over the fence. The guards initially tried to quell this with non-lethal rounds, you know, sort of rubber bullets and beanbags from the shotgun. That didn't work. So they requested and received permission to use lethal force, and they executed what was called Protocol Golden Spike. And they opened fire on the prisoners, and they shot 12 of them. Three of them died immediately, and one died later of his wounds. And this was sort of cataloged in the Taguba report as one of the incidents that was turning a page at Abu Ghraib in the treatment of detainees, in the attitude the soldiers had towards detainees, and then also in the sort of degrading conditions that followed based on that riot. Afterwards, members of my company were tasked with removing the bodies of those killed during the riot, and they diverted the truck carrying their bodies to a sort of isolated area. And they opened the body bags and took photos of the corpses and then further desecrated the corpses. One of the photos I have is of a member of my unit poised over the body of an Iraqi whose head has been split open with a plastic MRE spoon, like poising to scoop out his brains. And this was circulated in my company, and many members of my company had a photograph of this. And it was just, it had reached a point where that wasn't seen as horrible behavior, and it had become almost